Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to break down key tools from business and research, turning them into, well, stuff you can actually use. Today, project management. Think about it. Launching a product, planning a big event, rolling out a new system. If you've done any of that, you know the timeline. That's often where things go sideways. So the big question is there a way, maybe even like a mathematical way, to guarantee the fastest possible completion while juggling all those moving parts?
There absolutely is. It's called critical path analysis, or CPA. It's really a cornerstone technique in project management. It's designed to help you plan, schedule, and, importantly, control complex projects. You do that by breaking them down into smaller, manageable tasks. And the core aim, it's pretty simple, really. Finish the project in the shortest time possible while making sure all those task dependencies are respected.
Right, dependencies. We'll get into those. And this CPA method, it's not just for, you know, building bridges or something huge.
Not at all. It actually started with complex defense projects back in the 50s, but its use now is incredibly broad. Think software development, big marketing campaigns. I've even seen it applied in coordinating complex surgeries. It's versatile.
Wow.
And the key thing is, it forces you to plan ahead. You map everything out first, every task, who depends on what. That way, CPA helps you see potential bottlenecks, identify where the real risks to your timeline are long before they actually become problems.
Okay, so that's our mission for this deep dive then. We're going to walk through this system, figure out how to identify that critical sequence of tasks, the path where even a small delay could jeopardize the whole project. And maybe to make it clear, let's use a running example. Say we're planning the rollout of a new corporate training module.
Yeah.
Interactive, maybe.
Good idea. A tangible example helps.
All right, let's unpack the CPA thing. So you said CPA involves mapping things out. It needs a visual roadmap, right? Mm-hmm. And it all hinges on these dependencies, the idea that task B can't start until task A is done. For our training module example, what would that map actually look like?
Yeah, the visual part is key. And it starts by defining those dependencies really clearly. So, for our training module, maybe task A is write the course script and curriculum. Let's say that takes 5 days. Task B could be film the instructional videos. Now, task B completely depends on task A being finished.
Okay, so filming can't start until day 6, assuming task A finishes on day 5.
Exactly. And we visualize this using what's called a network diagram. Think of it as the project's roadmap. It has two main components. First, you've got nodes. These are usually circles, and they represent the events, basically, the start or finish points of an activity. We number them sequentially to show the flow.
Gotcha. Circles for start and finish moments, and then the lines connecting them.
Those are the arrows. The arrows represent the actual activity or task, like writing the script. The arrow shows the direction, the order, and usually you'll write the estimated duration right there on the array. Maybe 5 days for script writing. And the whole diagram flows logically, generally left to right. What's really helpful is it lets you show tasks happening in parallel. For instance, maybe while the script, task A, is being written, someone else, task C, is setting up the IT infrastructure for the module. They can run side by side on the diagram.
Right, parallel paths. So for our training module, we'd map out everything. Writing, filming, maybe editing, user testing, final launch. All the steps with their dependencies. But like you said, the map's just a picture until we add the numbers.
Yeah.
This is where it gets interesting, right? Calculating the project length, defining earliest and latest times.
Exactly. This is the calculation engine of CPA, and it involves two key calculations working in opposite directions. We start by calculating the earliest start time, or EST. This is simply the absolute soonest an activity can possibly begin, given its dependencies.
Soonest it can start. Okay.
And we figure this out by moving left to right across our network diagram. We call this the forward pass.
And the calculation itself. Is it complex?
Not really. The basic idea is simple. The EST for a task is the EST of the task immediately before it, plus the duration of that preceding task.
Okay. EST of previous plus duration.
Yeah.
But what if a task depends on two things finishing? Like, say, our editing task needs both the filming and maybe a separate script review to be complete first.
Ah, good question. That's a crucial rule. If a node, an event point, has multiple tasks feeding into it, let's say filming finishes on day 10, but the script review doesn't finish until day 12. Which time do you use to start editing?
The later one, day 12, because you have to wait for both.
Exactly. you must take the largest value. Your start time is constrained by the dependency that finishes last. You're only as fast as your slowest prerequisite. So editing can't start until day 12.
Okay, that makes sense. EST gives us the aggressive best case timeline, the absolute earliest we could finish everything.
Yep.
Now, what about the other direction? You mentioned calculating backwards. Is that about deadlines or safety margins?
Precisely. We need to know the latest possible time things can happen without causing delays. That's where the latest finish time, or LFT, comes in. LFT is the absolute latest a task can finish without pushing back the overall project completion date.
Okay, the drop-dead finish time for each task.
Right. And we calculate this by moving right to left across the diagram. We call this the backward pass, starting from the project end date. The basic formula here is the LFT of the task equals the LFT of the task that follows it minus the duration of that following task.
So LFT of next minus duration. And I'm guessing there's a similar rule if multiple paths lead back to a single point.
There is, and it's the opposite logic of the EST rule. When you're calculating backwards, imagine your task's output feeds into three different subsequent tasks. Working backwards, maybe one path tells you your task must finish by day 15, another says day 18, and a third says day 20.
Which LFT do you use? The earliest deadline, day 15.
You got it. You must take the smallest LFT value calculated from the backward paths. You have to satisfy the strictest deadline. If you finish on day 16, you've already missed that day 15 requirement for one of the subsequent tasks, and the whole project timeline could slip.
Wow, okay. Smallest LFT going backwards, largest EST going forward. It's like defining the absolute earliest start and the absolute latest finish for every single step.
Exactly. And the power is, now for every single task in our training module rollout, we know both those times, the EST and the LFT.
And comparing those two numbers, that's how we find the critical path.
That's the key. The critical path is simply the sequence of tasks where the EST and LFT are essentially the same, meaning there's no slack. It's the chain of activities that adds up to the longest total duration through the network diagram. And because it's the longest path, it dictates the minimum possible time for the entire project.
The longest path sets the minimum time. Got it.
And any delay on any task along this specific critical path will directly delay the project's final completion date. No exceptions.
Okay, so how do we identify which specific tasks are on this critical path? You mentioned EST and LFT being the same.
Yeah, there's a quick check, often called the three-point test, to see if an activity is critical. For any given task, one, its earliest start time, EST, must equal its latest start time, LST. You can calculate LST easily once you have LFT. Two, its earliest finish time, EFT, must equal its latest finish time, LFT. Again, EFT is just EST plus duration.
The earliest and latest times match up.
And three, this is the practical implication. Its start time plus its duration equals its finish time. Whether you use earliest times or latest times, the equation holds.
What does that third point really mean for the person managing the project? Start plus duration, finish.
It means zero float. That's the takeaway. Zero wiggle room, absolutely no spare time for that task.
Ah, okay. No buffer at all.
Exactly. And strategically, this tells the manager where their focus must be. These critical tasks are the potential bottlenecks. If filming the videos is on our training module's critical path, you can't just hope it goes well. You need eyes on it, maybe allocate extra resources preemptively, ensure tight supervision.
While the non-critical tasks, they have some flexibility.
Right. They have float. They can be managed with a bit more breathing room.
Okay, let's talk about that breathing room then. This flexibility, or float, what is it precisely and how does a manager use it strategically?
Float, sometimes called slack, is simply the amount of time a particular task can be delayed without affecting the project's overall completion date. It's the buffer time inherent in non-critical activities.
So it's the spare time calculated from the difference between the earliest and latest times?
Essentially, yes. Identifying float is super important for resource leveling. If one critical task is falling behind, but another non-critical task has, say, 5 days afloat, the manager might be able to strategically pull resources, maybe people, maybe equipment, from the flexible task for a few days to help the critical one catch up without jeopardizing the final deadline.
That sounds really useful. Are there different kinds of float?
There are a few types, but the main one managers focus on is total float. This is the maximum time an activity can be delayed before it impacts the project's overall finish date. The calculation is pretty straightforward. Total float equals the task's latest finish time, LFT, minus its earliest start time, EST, minus its own duration.
LFT minus EST minus duration.
Okay. So if your task designing promotional materials for the training module has a total float of 5 days, it means we could potentially delay the start of that design work or let it take longer by up to 5 days total and still hit our overall module launch date. That's valuable information for resource allocation.
Definitely. Okay, one more technical thing before we evaluate CPA overall. Those diagrams. Sometimes you see these dotted lines. Dummy activities. They look weird. They don't take time or resources. So yeah. Why are they even there?
That is a fantastic question because they do seem a bit abstract at first glance. A dummy activity is essentially an invisible logical constraint. It's there purely to show a dependency relationship correctly without actually representing any work or time.
An invisible link. Why not just draw a normal arrow?
Because a normal arrow implies an activity with duration. Sometimes you need to show that, say, activity C depends on activity A finishing, A and D activity D also depends on activity A finishing, but maybe C and D don't depend on each other at all. If you just drew arrows from A to C and A to D, it might look fine, but in more complex scenarios, you could accidentally create incorrect dependencies. For example, if another task, say activity E, depends on both C and D finishing, simply drawing arrows from A might make it unclear if E also indirectly depends just on A, or if it truly needs both C and D completed independently after A.
I think I see. The dummy activity clarifies the exact dependency without adding time. It forces the logic.
Precisely. Think of it like this. If task C needs A and task D needs both A and B, you might have A and B finishing at node 1. You draw an arrow for task C starting from node 1. But for task D, you need to show it depends on both A and B. A dummy arrow, zero duration, might run from node 1, where A finished, to node 2, where B finished. Then task D starts from node 2, correctly showing it depends on both.
Okay, it's a technical necessity for complex diagrams to keep the logic pure and the EST-LFT calculations accurate.
You got it. Necessary footnote, basically.
All right, so we've defined the path, calculated the timings, EST-LFT, identified the critical bits, understood float, and even tackled dummy activities. Now let's zoom out. What does this whole CPA process really mean for you, the person trying to launch that training module on time? Let's weigh the pros and cons. What are the big benefits?
Well, the number one benefit is clarity. Especially in complex projects with loads of tasks and dependencies. CPA cuts through the noise, it gives you that visual map, and clearly highlights the handful of critical tasks that absolutely must stay on schedule. That simplifies management focus immensely.
And that focus leads to better efficiency, right? Yeah. Putting resources where they matter most.
Directly. You're not wasting effort micromanaging tasks that have plenty of float. You concentrate on the critical path. This focus naturally helps with resource allocation and often with budgeting and cost control, too, because timelines are clearer.
Makes sense. Clear timelines definitely help with the money side. Any other big pluses?
Its versatility is a plus. It works for massive construction projects, but also for smaller things like planning a conference or, like our example, a training module launch.
Okay, clarity, efficiency, resource focus, cost control support, versatility. Sounds great.
Yeah.
But there have to be downsides, right? Limitations.
Oh, absolutely. And it's crucial to understand them. CPA's single biggest weakness is its total reliance on accurate estimates, particularly the duration estimates for each task. If you guess wrong about how long filming the videos will take...
Garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly. If your duration estimates are flawed, maybe overly optimistic, which is common, then the entire critical path calculation becomes unreliable. You might end up focusing resources on the wrong sequence of tasks.
Yeah, that human element, the optimism bias. We always think things will take less time than they actually do.
It's a huge factor. Managers often input wishful thinking rather than realistic durations. The math of CPA is sound, but it's only as good as the data you feed it.
What else limits it?
Well, CPA is fantastic at planning based on what you know or estimate, but it's terrible at handling the unknown unknowns, the unforeseen disruptions. Weather delays on a construction site, key personnel getting sick, sudden strikes, major supply chain breakdowns, a pandemic, for instance. Your CPA chart for the training module looks perfect, but then the lead video editor quits unexpectedly, or the cloud server you needed has a global outage. CPA doesn't predict or easily model those external shocks.
So it assumes a relatively stable environment?
Pretty much. It also focuses almost exclusively on time. While that's critical, projects also have constraints around cost, quality, scope, and importantly, human factors like team morale or burnout. CPA doesn't inherently model those trade-offs.
Right. It tells you the fastest path, but not necessarily the cheapest path, or the path that produces the highest quality result, or the path that keeps your team happiest.
Exactly. And for extremely large, complex projects, think building a space station, creating and maintaining the CPA diagram itself can become incredibly time-consuming and complex.
Okay, so it's powerful, but not a magic bullet. It needs accurate data, doesn't handle external shocks well on its own, and mainly focuses on time.
That sums it up well. Think of CPA as an indispensable roadmap. It shows you the quickest theoretical route, but you still need to drive carefully. It works best when it's not used in isolation. Pair it with other tools. Gantt charts are often better for visualizing day-to-day schedules for the team. Budgeting systems track the money. Risk management plans address the unforeseen. Used together, you get a much more holistic, realistic view of your project.
That's a great perspective. CPA is the structural blueprint for the timeline. But you need other tools to manage the actual construction. So, to recap this deep dive, critical path analysis helps find the longest and therefore time-dictating sequence of tasks. We find it using that three-point test where EST equals LST, EFT equals LFT, meaning zero float. We learn the crucial calculation rules, take the largest value for EST going forward and the smallest value for LFT coming backward. And we saw the strategic value of calculating total float for flexibility, and why those seemingly odd dummy activities are sometimes needed for logical accuracy. Okay, time for our final provocative thought for you, the listener. We've established that a limitation of CPA is that it often ignores human factors. So imagine you're managing our training module project. Your CPA shows that the task formatting the training manual is non-critical. It has, say, 5 full days of total float. Knowing this, what's your strategy? Do you immediately delay that formatting task if another critical task starts to struggle, pulling the resources away because mathematically you can, or is there an opportunity cost? What happens to the morale or engagement of the team assigned to formatting if their work is constantly being delayed or deprioritized, even if the overall deadline isn't affected? When does the human path diverge from the critical path? Something to think about next time you're balancing the numbers with the people. That's all for this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.